everyone, and welcome to Rad Chat, the multi-award-winning first therapeutic radiographer-led oncology podcast. Welcome to podcast number 122. My name's Jane McNamara, and I'm joined by fellow host Namanjalka Anderson.
Hi, everyone.
So a big thank you to our last guest, Nicola Nuttall, who will be discussing the Be More Laura Foundation that she set up in memory of her daughter, Laura. So if you haven't had a chance yet, please do go and take a listen. So we're really pleased to introduce our long-term friend and guest, Kat Tunnicliffe, who's going to be discussing Percy Health and Exercise Oncology Physiotherapy. So welcome, Kat. You're a pro now at podcasting because we've had you on previously for a short little snippet, haven't we?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, well, it's our absolute pleasure. So, Kat, for anyone out there who doesn't know you, can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, why you decided to become a physiotherapist and how you got there?
Okay, so I have been a physiotherapist. I graduated in 2004. Couple of decades ago now, and I was actually, when I was a teenager, I had an injury playing netball and had to go and see a physiotherapist, and we got on really, really well. And what I really enjoyed was the coming together with sort of shared goals and shared responsibility between us. But he also said, you talk a lot, and you would be really, really good at motivating people to get better from injury, to move more. So come and do some work experience in my clinic, and sort of grew from there. So did my undergraduate degree graduated in 2004, did my NHS rotations, junior rotations in the NHS, and then senior rotations in the NHS. And I was very much a inpatient physiotherapist for many years. And I then, as they do say, moved over to the dark side into outpatients. And it was actually my team lead was going on maternity leave, and she said, I'd really like you to cover my shoulder clinic, which was a clinic with a consultant led shoulder clinic. And I was absolutely terrified. It's the most scary joint, requires lots and lots of extra study, really complicated, moves in seven different ways. And the fear really re-sparked my love of study and postgraduate courses, and really spent a lot of time sort of honing my skills and postgraduate MSc modules for the shoulder and the upper quadrant. So stayed within musculoskeletal for a little while in outpatients in the NHS and in private practice. And the breast is part of the upper quadrant. So sort of moved into seeing a lot of oncology patients, usually who had come to the end of active treatment. And the amount of sort of shoulder dysfunction and upper quadrant injury following surgery for breast cancer and also radiotherapy. And then was very fortunate to secure a breast cancer physiotherapy role at King's College Hospital, and all of the sort of postgraduate study that I've done up at Sheffield Hallam University with an incredible mentor, that is Jo McNamara, and having the opportunity.
I didn't pay you.
Oh, it's an absolutely amazing module, the pre-habilitation and rehabilitation for cancer patients. Really, it was just a great opportunity to sort of work on the module with other professionals. So certainly within outpatient physiotherapy, it was mostly physiotherapists, and actually working in oncology it's so, so complex in terms of the side effects that patients can experience during treatment and as a consequence of treatment, that no one health professional can treat it all. And actually sort of working with other professionals of the multidisciplinary team, with all with the patient's sort of needs, delivering personalised care, that's at the heart of what we do. So that is my clinical background. And for the last few years now, I have been a clinical specialist oncology physiotherapist for Percy Health, and I am the head of clinician engagement.
So Kat, you talked about how it's quite specialist and you require lots of different like bits of training and postgraduate qualifications. Sounds like you're a bit of a rare breed though, because lots of physios don't like to go near oncology patients. Why is that?
I think it was going back to the amazing podcast that you did with Isla Veal, that it really was drummed into you at undergraduate level that you can't go near patients with cancer, you can't do manual therapy, they can't exercise, they have to rest. And it's just not true. And one of the greatest pleasures is to be able to quash those myths. And even from sort of physiotherapy students to say, come and do an oncology rotation and see what it's all about. And one of the great things, because of the nature of oncology and its treatment, it really does go across all of the aspects of physiotherapy. So it can impact bone health, so your orthopedics, musculoskeletal health, so your musculoskeletal and outpatient placements, neurology, elderly care, community, hospice work. It works across the entire board. And I think that, so it's very much, yes, there are some sort of postgraduate studies to sort of improve your knowledge and experience of cancer and cancer treatments themselves. But really in my day-to-day practice, it's just bread and butter of what, you know, if something's weak, strengthen it. If something's stiff, you mobilize it. If something's tight, you stretch it. Doesn't matter about what the cause is.
You've made it sound like physios are integral to cancer care. Why does everyone not necessarily have access to a physiotherapist, particularly if they're going through some of the quite aggressive cancer treatments that will obviously affect the body a lot physically?
If I had my way, that there would be a dedicated physiotherapist in every oncology clinic, or certainly a pathway to refer to a physiotherapist. It's throughout the entire pathway. So from the point of diagnosis, prehabilitation and rehabilitation, from diagnosis throughout active treatment, beyond treatment, preventative medicine and risk reduction, it goes across the entire board. And it would be very rare not to need some help with physical support during that treatment journey. And it would be amazing to have a dedicated oncology specialist within those oncology clinics, but we know that doesn't exist at the moment. And very, very big sort of mission, and my colleagues that do specialise in oncology, is being able to sort of reach out to the wider networks of physiotherapy to reassure them of their role and their what they can contribute in supporting these patients.
How does oncology physiotherapy work across the world?
Ooh, that's a very good question. It's mixed. Certainly, I would say that of my colleagues that I'm linked with in the States, Australia and New Zealand are really, really trying to push for, just physical. I don't know if you know Helen Beely, for example, like really pushing for physical activity to be the fourth cancer treatment. I think we all are. And they definitely do come across sort of roadblocks with being able to, like, if exercise, for example, was a pill that you could prescribe, that it would be given out to anybody that's embarking upon cancer treatment. And there are some amazing things that they're doing in Australia and New Zealand, where they have their chemotherapy patients on exercise bikes while they're having treatment, and lots of really exciting research and sharing of knowledge, showcasing the amazing oncology specialists that are working really, really hard to get resources out there for non-specialist professionals, but also for the patients that they're treating. And but it definitely differs in sort of I grew up in Hong Kong, and I was hoping that one day to be able to work in Hong Kong. And when I was sort of looking at sort of jobs for physiotherapy, working in sort of physiotherapy clinics there, oncology physio didn't, it's just part of musculoskeletal, anyone can do it sort of thing. And it was sort of, let me teach you, let me share the knowledge and the experience that I've picked up over the years of being able to deliver really targeted, personalised care for these patients. But it's, in terms of the professional community of specialist interest of allied health professionals within oncology, it is growing and it is starting to get more international, which, and having amazing platforms like RadChat podcast and utilizing sort of social media to be able to kind of get that message out there is a great thing, and it's really, really exciting to be involved in it.
You mentioned Percy Health. Can you talk us through what Percy Health is and what you do as part of your role there?
So Percy Health is a digital healthcare startup, and it is a pioneering virtual cancer rehabilitation clinic with a really broad community of multidisciplinary cancer experts that are delivering care to patients on one digital platform. So we now have 50 professionals ranging across physical support, psychological support, nutritional support and practical support. And we want to work with cancer teams to ensure that cancer treatment and its side effects doesn't stand in the way of anyone from living or working to their full potential. So my role at Percy, so I am a physiotherapist on the platform, but as head of clinician engagement, I'm responsible for all of the professionals on the platform. So I drive advocacy, experience and success amongst all of our Percy professionals, ensuring that they are happy, safe, delivering expert, high quality, evidence-based care. We also have an amazing medical advisory board, clinical advisory board and lived experience advisory board. And we are driven by research and data. So really, really exciting organisation to be involved in.
Do you think that Percy Health is growing and even needed because of maybe the lack of resources at the moment within the NHS and the fact that patients are seeking advice and support because they don't get access to the healthcare professionals that maybe they need or maybe over time used to be able to access?
Absolutely. So it is about improving access, and by being a remote platform, anyone living with and beyond cancer and those that are caring for people who are living with and beyond cancer can access it regardless of where they live. And these experts are working in multi-professional teams to deliver expert care on specific challenges or concerns that might be impacting their quality of life, their resilience to treatment, or getting back to things that they're passionate about, or getting back to work. And like I was saying before, no one professional can treat everything, and certainly in sort of more sort of complex side effects like fatigue, for example, they might need physical support, emotional support, practical support, coaching with regards to work, to return to work, being able to have conversations with their managers with regards to their fatigue. So it's bringing all of the team together to be able to sort of deliver sort of targeted, personalized care. And it is about improving access, and And we want, you know, to be able to reach as many people as we possibly can to deliver that expert support from NHS trained professionals. And then from the professional side of things to really have a very positive experience for our professionals so that they can continue to thrive within their NHS roles where they may have less time, less resources to deliver the care that they want to be able to deliver. So it sort of works. It's working on both sides. And my responsibility is to ensure that our professional community grow and also for our existing professional community to be engaged and to be happy in order to deliver the best care for their patients.
Kat, let's pretend I'm a patient. How can I access support through you? Let's say I need a stairlift. Let's chuck an OT in there. Everything, all of my care needs. How do I come to you and get supported right now?
So there are different ways in which you can access the platform. So you can actually just search online for percyhealth.com and it will give you'll be able to see which various support types there are. Percy Health can also be accessed via certain employers and charities. And it's funny that you mentioned occupational therapy because we have recently recruited an occupational therapist to our platform, which we're really, really excited about. And with these sort of remote appointments, you can have these one-to-one appointments with the professional to be able to really focus on a personalised care plan to be able to identify what are your specific concerns, what are your specific challenges. And an occupational therapist, for example, would be able to recommend physical and cognitive support in order to achieve those goals. When it comes to things like equipment ordering, if Anna's currently on leave at the moment, so I can speak on her behalf, but it would be sort of negotiating with local council and social services in order to be able to deliver on those particular recommendations.
How does it work from a technological inequity side? So if someone's not able to access the platform, so I know you talked quite nicely there, how you can link to local communities and stuff.
So increasing access to services and improving health equity is why Percy Health was created. We closely follow the NHS guidance around digital exclusion, which includes design, user centre and inclusive digital health approaches. So one of our co-founders, Morgan, comes from a digital background. He's working really, really hard and very focused on bringing sort of user-centered design into the cancer space. And we also get regular, we do regular sort of user testing and get regular user feedback to ensure that we're meeting accessibility criteria. We also offer choice to our patients on how they'd like to be contacted or receive information. We can provide care through phone calls or messaging, as well as through virtual clinics. And we also refer people into local community resources where appropriate. We're really starting to see the positive sides of virtual care, which means that patients everywhere can access the very best professionals and get the highest standard of care. But it also takes away some of the barriers to accessing in-person care, like commute times, transportation, and carer responsibilities. And we've seen that about 18% of our current users are aged between 60 and 70. So age doesn't seem to be a barrier yet. But as we grow, it's something that we need to keep watching and refining just so that we can continue to increase access to our much needed services.
As our professionals are NHS trained, there's no difference in sort of the care and the signposting that they are that they're doing within the NHS. It's no different on the platform. But what is really nice is once you get an idea of where the member is based, you can actually then start to direct them to things like the cancer care map. So being able to access certain services within their local communities. And also we've got an enormous, great sort of WhatsApp group that was set up by Joe of professionals working across the country to be able to tap, because some people might need face-to-face input. Certainly within physiotherapy, they might need some hands-on input. They might require acupuncture. They might require taping for lymphedema, for example. So, you know, it's being able to sort of say, whereabouts are you? Have you got access to this, that and the other? And then being able to kind of make those recommendations and also support the professionals in those areas. I've had a few Percy members actually take me in on a laptop to their one-to-one clinic, and then we can quite happily sort of talk through what's required, and I can offer that support there if needed.
Hi everyone. So we wouldn't be able to do what we do without some sponsorship and help from some amazing people. So we've just got a short advert here coming up just so that you can hear some of the products from one of the sponsors that have supported us right from the start.
We have an incredibly exciting time at OSL at the moment with new products within our portfolio coming to the market. One new product is ClearSight Bolus, completely translucent, semi-adhesive and compatible with surface-guided radiotherapy solutions. Another product is the IBA Microwave Proactive System, the only commercial prospective risk management solution for radiation oncology. You'll find much more information about this on our website.
If you would like to browse our products, please go to our website at www.osl.uk.com, or if you would like to speak to us, please call 01743 462 694.
In terms of advice that you would give patients, we have been able to utilise your skills extensively whilst we've been running Rad Chat. And I think every time we see you, we're like, can we just do us a quick video, which I know makes you cringe, but we really appreciate it. So, Kat, from a podcasting perspective, if you had a patient, and I know obviously your area of advice and support for patients is that upper quadrant and the shoulder, what advice would you give patients preparing for radiotherapy, during radiotherapy and afterwards?
Okay. So I would say my take home for preparing for radiotherapy is as well, radiotherapy and or breast surgery. If you, some sort of considerations are, did you have any or do you have any neck or shoulder problems before embarking upon treatment? Because what we do know is that breast surgery and radiotherapy can affect the upper quadrant in terms of movement, strength, and sort of tightness, the ability to load that tissue. So if you've got any existing neck stiffness, shoulder weakness, shoulder tightness, whatever it might be, that is already an added layer that we could be doing some work to improve upon, to ensure that you get the most out of sort of functioning during and after treatment. So before even embarking upon it, the questions that you really should be asking your patients is, have you got any previous neck or shoulder problems? I also like to know, is there surgery or radiotherapy on their dominant side? It could be really, really helpful to sort of tailor exercise programs depending on whether somebody is having surgery or radiotherapy on the dominant side. Another really, really important thing to find out is, what are your hobbies? You know, some might, you know, need to do, you know, to be able to reach up above their head if they're a dragon boat racer, for example, or if they need to get their favourite cereal bowl off the top shelf. Now, hobbies are really, really important because it gives you an idea of what we're wanting you to hopefully continue throughout treatment, or certainly working in ways of getting you back to during treatment. The only other thing from a pre prehab questioning sort of point of view is ergonomics. So we know that sort of neck and shoulder dysfunction has taken over mechanical back pain in what we tend to see in clinic, and desk workers, mobile phone users, commuters that are sort of sitting with, that's when everybody sits up straight when I start talking. And it's really, really important that if you are embarking on any treatment for the upper quadrant, is get your posture, work economics, talk to your manager about sort of positioning in your chair, taking regular breaks from your computer. You know, there's lots of things where you can kind of time how long you've been on your devices, and it's all in, you know, we're wanting to really sort of open up that area and not reinforce closing it down. So that's just before sort of embarking upon treatment. Now, certainly within breast cancer, every breast unit will have access to some form of post-operative exercise leaflet for patients to do after surgery. Now, the main reason why you should have exercises post-operatively, first of all, to get you back to function, doing the things that you enjoy, and secondly, this area has been injured, so it needs to be loaded, it needs to be stretched. The muscles need to be loaded, the tissue needs to be mobilized, and also the exercises are really good for lymphatic system stimulation and movement. And then finally, why we do post-operative exercises is in order to achieve the desired radiotherapy positioning. So it's not the most comfortable position. I was very fortunate to be able to deliver some lecturing up at Sheffield for some second year therapeutic radiographer students, and you actually had a breast board in there, and to actually have the opportunity to be able to lie in the board myself and really know that it's not just about out to the side and above, but you're really going back and beyond. And those exercises are designed to get you into that desirable position to be able to have your radiotherapy planning and to be able to have radiotherapy treatment. Now, quite often people will do their post-operative exercises, and the majority of people do come into radiotherapy having achieved full range of movement, and they're like, check me out, I don't need to do exercises anymore. But what we do know in terms of soft tissue healing, probably the point that you're starting radiotherapy, that maybe 4 to 6 week mark post-surgery, you're only really in a very early phase of healing. So something known as the proliferative phase or the scabby phase of healing. And even if your scabs and scabs have dropped away from the scar, there's still very much healing, reorganization, re-knitting, and also your brain has to kind of catch up with what's happened to the area. Now, the entire healing process, I would say, can take about 18 months to 2 years. So that's where the scar has gone almost to the same colour as your skin, and it's moving, it's soft, you've got movement above and below that particular area. Now, when people are embarking upon radiotherapy, it's like, oh, well, I've got full range now, and it's the scab's come away, so it's healed, I don't need to do anything else. And then what we tend to see is that patients kind of come back to clinic sort of maybe 6 to 8 weeks following radiotherapy, and it's like, I don't know what I've done, but I'm really stiff and I'm really tight. Why didn't anyone tell me about this before? So if I was to have a t-shirt printed, I would actually say that even if you've got full range of movement, that you need to continue to maintain your range of movement throughout radiotherapy and beyond for life. So it's, and in terms of that soft tissue healing, I get a lot of questions as to, well, once I've had my radiotherapy, how long is it going to, why am I still tight a year down the line? And actually, that soft tissue, that 2 year soft tissue healing phase really starts after the last radiotherapy. So it is a lot longer than people anticipate. And it's about sort of getting that groundwork in now and then continue to maintain what you've gained. And I often say, you know, we have to brush our teeth every day to maintain our oral health. Some form of stretches, even if you've got full range of movement, is really, really important for maintaining your breast health.
I could definitely hear you talk for like forever. You're always very thorough and detailed when you talk about this sort of stuff.
Happy to. And, you know, there are the breast cancer mini series is, you know, there's some good tips in terms of stretches, muscle energy techniques, ways in which you can improve your rib angles. I know that you get quite a lot of questions about ribs and sort of tightness around that particular area. So there's lots of sort of resources out there. But unfortunately, radiotherapy is the gift that keeps on giving. A lot of people do have tightness months, years, and even decades down the line. So getting the good habits in now to gain and then maintain what you've gained. And, you know, don't hesitate to sort of reach out to us if you... I would say another thing is don't necessarily wait until your treatment's ended before seeking help. It's, you know, if we can get to the bottom of these things quicker, then your quality of life is going to be better. Your tolerance to treatment is going to be better. And I'm a very, very big advocate of physiotherapy actually empowering patients to contribute towards their own recovery. And by doing, you know, your recommended guidelines of physical activity, your exercise, snacking, pacing and graded exposure, this maintenance exercise is you're contributing towards your own recovery and improving quality of life. So what's not to love?
Based on everything that you've taught Naman and I over the last couple of years as well, I have such a passion to teach every therapeutic radiographer that I now train to do exercises to then pop to patients, because I think it is so important. We have such an amazing ability to have a one-on-one time with our patient, albeit 10, 15 minutes every single day. But, you know, for us to be able to just say that piece of advice that you've imparted now about, you know, you need to maintain those exercises for life, start to add it to your daily routine whilst brushing your teeth, can absolutely revolutionise someone's quality of life later, when actually radiation fibrosis does maybe start to develop. So that's kind of something that you've imparted onto us that hopefully we can really try and emphasize amongst colleagues to impart to our patients and hopefully improve the patient care later on.
And it's like allied health professionals sort of working with patients at the heart. I've learned so much from therapeutic radiographers about skin care, you know, top tips for when you're going for radiotherapy. And it's that sort of working together, just expanding that professional knowledge that's just out of that, you know, just sort of blurring those professional boundaries a little bit. Obviously, we're still treating patients within our scope of practice, but to be able to, you know, to be able to give those sort of tips and advice, to be able to make it the best possible experience for our patients who are living with and beyond cancer, and for the professional networks to grow as well, to be able to share knowledge and experience. But oh, I love therapeutic radiographers. They're amazing.
It is the best profession, Kat. Thank you for admitting it. Kat, with everything you've said, what's next for you?
Growing our Percy professional community. I'm so, so excited. And looking at ways in which we can bring together our professionals on the platform, bringing new professionals onto the platform, increased sort of CPD events. I'm hoping to get a podcast of my own, hopefully Percy Health for listening and give me my own podcast. And of course, you'll be the first guest. But just, yeah, expanding our networks, expanding our community, and for to just bring more experts onto the platform and enable them to thrive in their NHS, private, educational roles, and whilst also sort of treating people living with and beyond cancer. So very, very exciting to sort of bring the professional community together, to bring together professionals into sort of mini MDTs of delivering sort of more targeted care to some sort of more specific concerns. And just learning more about what constitutes an engaged and, you know, a good experience for our professional community, and showcasing the amazing things that they do. Because I know we're quite chatty and quite gobby, but when as allied health professionals, we're not very good at showcasing the amazing things that we do. So, I'll shout as loud as anyone will have me.
Oh, Kat, you're so amazing. And I really hope that anyone listening does go and check out our RadChat Instagram page, because there is an amazing rehabilitation series that you've collaborated with us on, which has you giving lots of demonstrations. Bless your poor husband, even got roped into some of those videos, but they are amazing. And it really does help teach the healthcare professionals and patients how they can potentially start to engage with some of the exercises. And there's so much helpful, useful information within those. So do check those out along with the podcast episode, and we'll link everything as well, Kat, that you've spoken about today. So we are nearing the end, although I know we could definitely talk all night, as we often do when we all get together face to face. The thing that we always end on is top tips. So you've given patients some amazing top tips. Is there anything for any students or healthcare professionals listening that you'd like them to take away from this podcast episode?
It's really not being afraid of oncology, the word oncology. And it's really personalised care, of actually getting an understanding of what your patient's goals are, getting an idea of the background before you embarking upon treatment, what might be impacting their ability to get back to work, their ability to get back to what they want to. Don't be afraid to be nosy in terms of what might be impacting you from getting back to those things. And I think, as I say, if you could get me a RadChat t-shirt with, you know, even if you've got full range of movement, Liz O'Riordan will tell you about, she was very cocky and thought she could just wing it. And she did an Instagram live with me, and now she does do her exercises every day. And so really, even if you've got full range of movement, you do need to continue these exercises to maintain the range of movement and function of the upper quadrant for life.
Thank you so much, Kat. Your hosts today have been myself, Jane McNamara, and Namanjolka Anderson. If you're utilising this podcast for CPD purposes, consider the reflective questions posted along with all the links, as I've said, and complete the Google form linked with the podcast. So our next guest to feature will be Katie Phillips, who will be discussing her experience of cancer and Talking with Cancer podcast. So thank you all for listening, and good night.